You've been lost in the woods for hours now, stumbling around in the dark. You come around the bend and see two people roasting marshmallows over a roaring fire. They see you coming into the clearing and gesture over to pull up a log. Welcome to Campfire Ashes. I'm Paul.
And I'm Jess. Join us as we tell each other our originally written spooky stories around the campfire and then dive into the lore and legends that inspired them. Is it something that goes bump in the night? Is it something menacing lurking past the tree line? Or is it just weird and otherworldly? You'll find it here on Campfire Ashes.
You can find us on Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, or right here on the Geekscape Network.
Hello everyone, we're Superhero Stuff You Should Know, and if you think you know about superheroes and comic books, think again.
We got romance, we got action,
romance.
We got comedy, we got everything you need, man. Come on down to Superhero Stuff You Should Know for all your superhero needs.
I don't know about this romance, what part are you talking about?
We've got all kinds of sketches, and then deep dives on top of that. Come on down to Superhero Stuff You Should Know.
Alright, so come on down to, wait, why did I say come on down? To Superhero Stuff You Should Know.
Hey everybody, I'm Chris Fafalius, and I'm the producer of Krista Makes a Podcast and the host of the One Hit Thunder podcast.
And I'm Matt Kelly, host of Horror Movie Night and the producer slash the head of content for the Geekscape Podcasting Network.
Between the two of us, we have, believe it or not, 25 years of podcasting experience, and we want to help you start your own podcast.
We know podcasting, and we want to share that knowledge with you.
So whether you're new to podcasting or you want some feedback on your currently active podcast, we want to help.
Or perhaps you're just overwhelmed with all of the editing work. Well, we can help you with that also.
You can check out our website at weknowpodcasting.com for more information.
We're excited to help your podcasting dreams become a reality. Another episode of Horror Movie Night. This week, we are talking about Alice Sweet Alice, I almost said a band, a movie that Brian was in a band that was named after.
Wait, what?
We were terrible.
They were really bad.
I assume, because you really need people to just whip you into shape, and when you're younger, I'm sure nobody whipped you into shape. But wait, so first of all, I'm shocked by the fact that Brian was in a band. Second of all, I'm shocked by the fact that Brian took 3 years of being on the show to pick Alice Sweet Alice after he was in a fucking band named after it.
Yeah, a band called Sweet Alice.
So this is one of those things where all I know is what I grew up on. So anything that I found in my 20s to me was like unknown horror. And anything I found before I was 13, I figured was like mainstream and everyone knew it. And then I found out Scott never saw it. And I was like, maybe Alice Sweet Alice isn't as popular as I thought it was. Because I saw it when I was young.
That had a whole lot to do with Colin.
Yes.
So there was a family friend whose son Colin would hang out with us constantly.
Who I watched Caligula with.
Yeah, he's the one that showed Brian Caligula, but he's also the one that showed Brian, like...
And then we watched 100 Days of Sodom. It was awesome, you know?
Yeah. Trick or Treat, Elephant Man, Halloween
Alice
Original,
Sweet Alice.
Alice Sweet Alice. Like, we had, like, the same routine. Crispy's debut film.
Yes.
Yeah! Is that the one where Matt... Wait, is Crispy's debut film the one where Matt was on a bike... On
no.
a stationary
no,
bike.
No,
and
was
supposed
was,
to...
No.
No, this was, he, for our senior year, he made a movie called Christian about a kid struggling with his Christianity, and it pissed me the
and
fuck
then he
off.
He made another one in 2020, the same thing, right?
Yeah. No, I mean,
Jesus
he makes,
versus Satan?
Yeah, he's been making a lot of the same movie. But what pissed me off. No. It, but
he doesn't listen to our show.
He knows that this pissed me off a ton, was that I had been involved with our school's like TV studio for years. I had won an award for a documentary that I had made at like a local film festival. Like, I was doing some big things. He made this really shitty movie that he just shot with his friends. And this teacher gave him like the filmmaker of the year award during our like end of the year like senior awards, and I was just like, fucking Crispy as the filmmaker of the year. Like, I'm so upset.
I love
about
the
it.
Fact that Matt is 35 and still pissed off about this shit.
I mean, he's my friend. I love him to death, but I told him, I was like, dude, you know that that's bullshit. Like,
he didn't pick it. Somebody else picked it.
I know. Yeah.
Here, you know what? I will tell you something. I don't think I've mentioned this on the show before. So here you go, episode 300, whatever. In high school, I had two friends named Scott. So we were the Scots, right? And one of them was a year older than me. And he absolutely fucked me up because he told me about the Nine Inch Nails, about fist fucking. I don't know. I'd never heard the concept of fist fucking. As soon as we post this, somebody's gonna be like, oh, you fucking idiot, you don't know what that's called. Okay, that's what you sound like in my brain, whoever says it, so don't say it. Anyway, the other Scott was one of my best friends from growing up, and we are, you know, still close, and I haven't spoken to the third Scott in, you know, probably 20 years. But the reason I bring this up is because he would bring his guitar to school, and, you know, he would want to be the guy that always was playing music. We were in show choir together, we were in choir together, we were in all the musicals together, we did all the stuff together. He would bring his guitar everywhere, and I got most musical in the senior superlatives, and it was because I had a pop punk band that was ripping off Green Day and Blink-182, just so everybody knows. I do not have any expectation of being a good musician, especially back in 2001.
My favorite with all the senior superlatives, I don't know if Brian ever heard this story, and I have to use the dude's full name, but he's a good friend of mine, and we laugh about this all the time, was we were reading the senior superlatives on the TV.
The news,
like,
right? Yeah.
Yeah, we would do like the morning news thing. So we're reading the senior superlatives at the end of the school, and my friend Matt Howard won most friendliest. And all of a sudden, from the complete other side of the hallway, I hear a girl that I went to school with named Claudia just go, "But that guy's an asshole," like loud and clear.
Well, okay, so to finish my story, that's not my story. Doesn't end as funny as yours. But to finish my anecdote, Scott was upset with me because he was like, "Why did you get most musical?" Dude, it's because I had a pop punk band and we would play at parties where the jocks would get fucking drunk. You know, like, I'm sorry, you were more musical.
That happened with our class too. Like, the kid who was the drummer and singer in a pop punk band won most musical over like the kid who had dedicated like 4 years.
Who went to fucking Berkeley?
Yeah, like he dedicated like 4 years to like mastering like six different instruments in the marching band. But like, no one gives a shit about the marching band. But they're like, Clark's band is really good. Like,
I love getting drunk to his three chords all the time.
You guys took those superlatives seriously, huh?
Yeah. What did you win?
Me? I didn't win anything, but I got pissed. Same. I got a lot of people pissed off at me for the dumbest reason. And my teachers found it hilarious. I made it into like 7 or 8 club photos.
You were in none?
I was
you
in
just
none of
showing
them.
Up.
And the people in the clubs got so mad. I just like kept going. I don't know why. I just kept.
Was that senior year? Because mom found all of your yearbooks.
Yes.
So I'm going to go
through
them.
So scroll
through.
You'll find them.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I wasn't in any clubs, right? But I would pop in as many as I could.
I would have hated you in high school. I would have been like, that guy is such a fucking douchebag. Why is he around?
So just to show.
Even your face sucked back then. You grew into your face.
So we had our picture. We had a picture day, right? And it was the picture was for the yearbook and also for your school ID. Well, as a senior, you got senior portraits, but you still had to participate in picture day because you needed picture. You needed a picture just for your ID, for nothing other than that. So me, Nick Morrell, and a few other kids, we took permanent markers and drew these big curly mustaches.
Fucking jerk.
So, Brian, real quick, I want to bounce back to Sweet Alice for a hot second.
Because the thing that we're supposed to be talking about, haven't talked about for 8 minutes.
Because I think that if I recall correctly, the way you got into Sweet Alice was essentially that Colin had formed a band called Sweet Alice and he needed a bass player, so he just convinced you to buy a bass and show up and play some songs.
Yeah.
I see no problem with that. That's exactly what I did to my best friend Eric, and we had a pop punk band. That's how I got most musical.
Yeah, I was interested in I to this day think that, because I always like, I'm still fascinated with drums. I'm obviously too old to learn it now, but I think I'd probably be a pretty decent drummer.
No, that's not true at all. Okay. That's not true at all.
He just wants an excuse.
Neither here nor there. What I'm saying is I wish I would have followed my dream. But just to show you how I'll never do a live stream was I got lessons for bass. I wasn't terrible at bass, and I knew all the songs by heart. And every single time we would go on stage to perform, this is exactly what I do. I get up with my bass, and then I turn my knob down to zero because I was so nervous, and then just play. And then everyone would be like, yeah, I couldn't even hear you. I'm like, oh, you could? I think there was something wrong with my amp.
Nope, must have been a bad mix.
All right, so let's talk about the actual movie, wow. Alice, Sweet Alice, because this movie, in the very first second, is basically like, hello, it's 1976. Like,
yes.
It is.
Yeah, yeah it is.
Shot and just feels like a movie from the mid-70s from the very first second of frame.
Yeah, and if anyone listened to last week's episode, I do have to correct myself on something I said. It is my favorite slasher from the 70s. It was egregious of me to say it was the best, especially after rewatching it, but it is like one of my favorites.
So that's like the funny thing with this movie is as I was watching it, I was like, man, I haven't watched this movie in forever. And I'm watching it, I'm like, man, this movie's a lot of fun, but I'm not going to watch it for a really long time again because it's like not a movie that excites me. Like, I'm not like,
it's
ooh,
not
I'm going to...
fun.
Yeah, like, I'm not like, ooh, I'm going to watch Alice, Sweet Alice. But like, I never am disappointed when I'm watching it, but it's definitely not like... Like, I'm house-sitting right now. I could promise you before this week is over, I'm rewatching Alligator for like the 100th time because like, I get excited to pop that movie in. But like I'm never.
Well, it's because
excited.
You're a world class herpetologist with fantastic tits.
Yeah.
Before we really get into the nitty gritty of this movie, so I watched this movie and was super confused because I was like, I understood 90% of it, but the end really fucked me up.
The last scene does not make sense
to
me.
Okay, great. So we'll get to that. But in my reading about it, there has been so much scholarly discussion about this film. It's crazy.
Really,
Fright School should be covering this more
yeah,
than
like
our movie
are
night.
Woefully unprepared for this. And I grew up Catholic. I've said it many times. So I caught the iconography in every scene because I was about, you know, probably 2/3, maybe even halfway through. And I'm like,
well, and this movie was released like, under the name Communion.
Multiple theaters. And the Communion poster was so difficult not to pick. The Alice, Sweet Alice that I know is the one that has like the mask on the side and the blood and blah blah. I think it's pretty sure. I'm pretty sure that's the one I picked. It's been a couple months, but the Communion artwork is so much better. I also think the Communion is a much better explanation of what this movie's about because Alice, Sweet Alice is almost a red herring as a title.
Yeah, but it also wouldn't be a great band name.
But here's the other thing I wanted to say, and then we'll get into the nitty-gritty of the movie. There's been so much scholarly research about this movie written, and I read a lot of it because I noticed the iconography as I was watching it, and I'm thinking, like, that's all intentional, you know, blah, blah, blah. But then it felt to me like there are people that are... from the future, you know, like in the 90s.
Oh, like doing like a revisionist history type deal to the
basically
movie.
Basically like adding their own in-person, like adding what they see because of their lives and what their livelihoods. They're like, well, that has to be like intentional. And I wanted to get both of you to give me kind of a thought about this where do you think that this movie was piecemealing out all of that super heavy-handed, or not, I'm sorry, not the heavy-handed stuff, but rather like it's saying all the things that people think it's saying, or do you think that that's kind of revisionist? Because I have an opinion, but I want to know what you guys
think. I think movies as a whole are revisionist. I think that anytime someone does a full dissection of them, for the most part, it's all revisionist.
Because Night of Living Dead is a prime example, right? Like Night of Living Dead.
Yeah, and that was great when you're talking about that one. What zombie movie were we talking about?
Day of the Dead.
Day of the Dead. You're talking about how, and I had never really thought about that, but you're talking about how the hero was never written as a black man. He fell into it, and Romero was like, well, I guess that worked one time. Might as well do it forever. And that's fine. Yeah. It's totally fine. But I think that scholarly research and discussion always has its finger up its own ass.
100%.
Because like when I was in college, that's why I didn't do English.
Well, because I think the flip side is like, yes, we can do revisionist history of Night of Living Dead, right? And you can do that all day long. Like, hey, it wasn't written to be a black character, so thus the subtext that you're seeing wasn't intentional. But the flip side of that is also like, the dude still casted a black man as the lead hero, like as the lead hero, which is like really progressive for 1968. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
like
that's
like
that's
an undeniable
true,
piece of that as well.
It's just like Alien. It's just like Alien, where they're like, oh, you know, she was supposed to be a guy, you know, or like she was originally written to be a guy. And he's like, yeah, but he said like it's interchangeable. He said this gen, no one in this movie has a gender. They're interchangeable. Whoever we cast, we cast.
No, it's funny though, because that works out so much more just based on how phallic that whole movie is.
It worked out
like,
perfectly.
Like, it works really well. Like, it's because it's a movie about male pregnancy. So, like, it kind of makes a ton of sense that, like, the female's the only one that, like, can keep a cool head about things.
I mean, I know that if there was an alien impregnating me with something, I would not be cool with it. So, point made.
So you talked about the poster with the pile of clothes and the plastic mask. And I gotta say, every time that mask pops up, that plastic see-through mask, anytime I see them, not just in a movie, just out in the wild, they are creepy fucking masks. Mm-hmm. Like, they are some of the creepiest masks in the world.
And it works. I mean, I'm not trying to say that this movie doesn't work, and I'm definitely not trying to say that this movie isn't good. And when I said at the beginning of the episode that this movie isn't fun, that doesn't mean it's not important. I mean, I think that that's something that gets lost in what we do in this show. And I know that we have hammered on, like, at least for me, I love charming and bad horror. This movie is ostensibly it's a good movie. Like, it's it really is good for 70s horror, and I don't even like 70s horror that much. But because of that, it's not fun, you know? Like, it doesn't have that charm.
Well, and I think that the other aspect for what you're talking about the potentially revisionist history of everything, right, is I think that it's also important to look at it through the lens of 70s cinema, because I think that this movie would fall into the category of like a controversial kind of blasphemy
Dude,
type film.
No, it's blasphemous. I would say this movie is more blasphemous than The Exorcist. Absolutely, because The Exorcist still has God triumphing over the devil, where this is just basically an insane religious Catholic fanatic.
Yeah. And what I think is important about that is, like, so I'm going to use this as an example. We did an episode of One Hit Thunder on Sinead O'Connor, and we were talking about her SNL performance, right?
Yep.
Where she goes up there and she basically calls out the Catholic Church for molesting kids, and it ruined her career in 1990. Because of like how big of a deal that was. And we were talking about like if that never happened and an artist did that exact same performance in 2021, they'd be looked at as a hero almost immediately. There would still be pissed off people, but I think the media perspective would be like, good for this person for like taking a stand type attitude. And I think that in 1976, you're making this movie knowing that this is going to piss people off and that a lot of theaters are not going to show your movie because of how pissed off it would make people, versus like Hellraiser 3, Hell on Earth, that gets like a wide release where like Pinhead is literally like doing the Jesus on the cross.
Yeah, the crucifixion. So here's a question for you. I love the perspective, but I would say two things. One is a question. Do you remember if this was shot in Chicago? Is that where it was shot?
I don't
New York?
Know.
Is it New York?
The only fact that, I mean, it feels very New York to me, honestly.
Yeah, I can't remember exactly where it was shot. Also, the guy wasn't really a filmmaker. He owned property that was used for movies, and he decided he wanted to do a movie. You, Matt, or anybody listening can tell me I'm wrong, because I did not take notes on that because I didn't really think we were going to get this deep into it. But I know that he was raised Catholic and had a lot of things to say about Catholicism. So there is that, you know, yes, people may be critics may be reading into what this movie is about on a microscopic level, but on the forest for the trees kind of thing, it's definitely there. It's very obviously there. But I gotta say, if we're talking about 2021 versus 1976 being sacrilegious, look at it. Yes, in 2021, the media, which is mostly social media, is probably going to support you. But then there are conservatives and
oh, yeah, you're not going to win 100% of the approval.
Little Nas X just gave a lap dance to the devil in a video, and people lost their fucking minds. So, I mean, we're not that far away from 1976 with having a Catholic fanatic slasher movie. I mean, I think that, but also in that same vein, art is supposed to be transgressive. Now, I'm not saying that art should be transgressive in a conservative way, because fuck that. Everybody that listens to us at least once knows that we are ultra progressive in our cultural beliefs. But I guess what I'm saying is that art should be progressive, as that it needs to push against conservative values, because that's what art always is. Conservative values are to keep things the same, and progressive values are to expand and change things. And so A movie like Alice Sweet Alice really fits into that mold.
Alice Sweet Alice, in a lot of ways, and I'd love to hear Brian's thought on this sentence, but
I'll
Alice
tell you
Sweet
what I
Alice
think it's about, or what I got out of it.
I was going to say, I think Alice Sweet Alice in a lot of ways is like a serious John Waters movie.
Well, yeah, like, so...
Yeah.
So, 100%, and I think that's like why the one really creepy guy doesn't, like, because usually...
The landlord?
Yeah, like, usually shit like that really bothers me, but it... Not that, like, I was like, oh, this is awesome, but it just seemed very, like, John Waters-y. But
well,
that's
so do you know the story of that guy?
I don't.
So, I need before, you guys to explain it to me, please.
That guy was just a bouncer at a gay bar that the director saw and was like, I need you in
this
movie.
That makes so much sense.
And he's like, I need you in this movie. He's like, I have a perfect role for you. And the guy's like, I'm not an actor. And he goes, I don't care. You are so perfect for this character that I'm trying to craft. And he like literally had to beg this guy to please be in his movie as the landlord.
Yes, that's the most
the hardest part was to be like, hey, you're going to eat some cat food.
Yeah, that's the most John Waters thing I've ever heard for a John Waters movie. But yeah, like, so overall, the message I got, and I'm sure, obviously, anytime you involve the church, it's automatically blasphemy, right? Anytime you bring up the church to most people, It's automatically blasphemy, but... Part of the reason I love this movie, what I think, and I don't know, this is 100% speculation. I don't think this is like an anti-religion movie as much as it's just like when you take things so literally and put like so much emphasis on a certain thing like religion, right? You can do horrible things and convince yourself that it's in the name of good, right? Like,
yeah, absolutely.
Like instead of like, because that's really what
because
it was.
Because even the pastor wouldn't have been for this. Yeah,
yes. Like her daughter.
That's why
died.
She killed him.
Her daughter died before. Like it was a tragedy. Her daughter was killed before her confirmation. She's like, okay, the parents have to be or the children have to be punished for the sins of their parents. That's why I sinned. That's why God took my daughter. Now I need to punish the, you know what I mean? It just shows the insanity where it's like, she's just hyper-focused on something, taking it so literally and doesn't think she's doing anything wrong. Like in confession, she was like excited to go to heaven.
She was absolutely shocked at the end when the preacher or when Father, what's his face, was like, oh my God, what did you do?
Yeah.
You stab him in the fucking neck. Now, I really only have one criticism of this movie, and it's not even the pacing. The pacing is fine for a 70s horror movie, in my opinion. My only criticism is the gotcha moment. It doesn't fucking need it. We don't need Alice picking up the knife and puts it in a bag at the end. Like, it's a gotcha moment it's saying,
it
like, oh, now
sense.
She's fucked up, but it doesn't make... No. I mean, I get what they were going for, but it doesn't fit with the tone of the movie. It doesn't make sense logically.
Let's pause for a quick second. Red herring or not, Alice has got some problems.
She's a shitty kid, but which makes her good red herring.
I think that was a note that I wrote down, like, halfway through the movie, where it's like, I know Alice isn't the killer... But, like, she should still probably be seeing a therapist.
Do you think kids got to see therapists in 76?
No, they barely get to see them in 2001.
Yeah.
As much as Alice at the end really sucks, what I do love about this movie, especially, and I think that it did better than most horror movies with a twist, is have the twist 20 minutes... You know, till the end, instead of just trying to, like, put every, like, oh, wow, this is who it is, and this is what they did.
I love that the killer revealed there's still 30 minutes left in the movie. Because it's like, okay.
We're not Scooby-Dooing the end.
Yeah.
Last week we talked about the Prowler. You know what I mean? Like, you find out who the killer is about 30 seconds before his face is blown to smithereens. And you just kind of have to be like, oh, I guess he was the person. Like, you have to, like, build your own kind of, like, okay, I'm pretty sure this is what his backstory is. And
the
same thing
happens.
But
that movie is not the same at all because it's about Savini's kills, man.
Oh, no, no, no.
It's not about Savini's kills.
But I think, in general, slasher movies, unless it's like a Michael Myers or a Freddy Krueger, like, the reveal, you don't have enough time to really piece together anything beyond, like, oh, that's who did it, and then they're dead, like, 30 seconds later.
Yeah, my Bloody Valentine, they had to do a verbal recap. and just like, oh, that's him. His mother was killed.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is definitely a low-budget movie. It's got a low body count. There's four people that die.
That's fine.
But I think that, like, the gore, when the gore is utilized properly, you know what I mean? Like, when the ant gets stabbed in the foot.
The landlord kills the best one.
Oh, my God.
The ant getting stabbed in the foot makes me squirm a little bit.
Yeah. Dude, even the sudden stab in the throat of the pastor, like...
Okay, that was the best scene of the movie, in my opinion, because I didn't see it coming.
Yeah. I don't think... I've seen this movie before, and I forgot that was about to happen. like, it's very, very shocking. Brian, I know you're always talking about trying to find your 70s out of the dark. I think you done did it, because this was... We got a little scholarly on this episode.
Don't expect this, people. This is very rare anymore.
You've been lost in the woods for hours now, stumbling around in the dark. You come around the bend and see two people roasting marshmallows over a roaring fire. They see you coming into the clearing and gesture over to pull up a log. Welcome to Campfire Ashes. I'm Paul.
And I'm Jess. Join us as we tell each other our originally written spooky stories around the campfire and then dive into the lore and legends that inspired them. Is it something that goes bump in the night? Is it something menacing lurking past the tree line? Or is it just weird and otherworldly? You'll find it here on Campfire Ashes.
You can find us on Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, or right here on the Geekscape Network.
Hello everyone, we're Superhero Stuff You Should Know, and if you think you know about superheroes and comic books, think again.
We got romance. We got action.
Romance.
We got comedy. We got everything you need, man. Come on down to Superhero Stuff You Should Know for all your superhero needs.
I don't know about this romance. What part are you talking about?
We've got all kinds of sketches, and then deep dives on top of that. Come on down to Superhero Stuff You Should Know.
All right, so come on down to... Wait, why did I say come on down? To Superhero Stuff You Should Know.
I do have something scholarly to say about my double feature, but I'll let you go first because you picked this. What's your double feature for this one?
Out of respect... I'm going to do Scream okay. Because of the twist. There is a perfect one, but I out of respect to Scott, I'm not going to pick one of the same two movies I always pick. It was going to be Town That Dreaded Sundown. And it's
That's funny because I was like, if he does Town That Dreaded Sundown, it's totally a bit. Like, yeah. You know?
No, it's genuinely, if I don't always pick that Ned Wood, it would genuinely be mine.
All right, so I'm picking Don't Look Now, which was a heavy influence on the style of this movie. The guy wanted to make this movie after watching that film. That's why you have that yellow raincoat. And it just visually, it reminds me of that movie. And I haven't watched that movie for a really long time. I've been meaning to just revisit it because I know that it's not so much a horror movie. It's like the 70s Hereditary, right? Like, it's not a horror movie about death, it's a horror movie about grief.
Yeah, and why I will never watch it, and if you try and do it on this show, I will tell you no.
There is nothing that we could bring the funny with.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't Look Now. How about you, Scott? What's your double feature?
I feel like such a doucher for saying this, but because of the very last second shocker, you know, twist, I'm going to have to go with Carrie.
Okay. The original of the shock ending. Yeah.
And they both have a lot of Vaseline on the camera, so I feel like they look a lot alike. I would start with Alice, Sweet Alice, and then I end with Carrie because Carrie is more fun, but they're also pretty sacrilegious back to back because, you know, Carrie's mom is another religious fanatic that led to a lot of murder and death.
Yeah.
And Carrie's on the tagline.
Brian, before we dive into the what did we watch this week, I do want to take a quick moment. If you're listening to this episode and you live in Pennsylvania, tomorrow I will be at Mahonan Drive-In for the Critters double feature, selling our first new shirt in over a year with the Roll a Crit D&D 20-sided die t-shirt. But more importantly, just say hi. Hang out at the Mahonan Drive-In. They're pretty sweet. And the Chiodos brothers will be there.
There's no downside to this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. It's outdoors. It's a beautiful theater. And I'll be there. So go. All right, Brian.
Okay, maybe one downside.
Okay, there is one downside. Brian, what is your double feature you want to talk about?
Well, I already talked about it, but I will tell you what I watched this week because we already did double features.
Oh my God, I'm falling apart. What is something that you watched this week, Brian? How about you tell us about it?
Oh, I watched Wrath of Man, or by Guy Ritchie.
Oh, I didn't even know he had a new movie.
Yes, yes, very good.
Is it 2021?
Yeah, yeah.
Nice.
It is, for an action movie, phenomenal movie. by far, like, not even close to Guy Ritchie's best movie. But what's so amazing is, like, it's such a bad print. Like, it's when you see the trailer and even when you look up the plot line, you're like, what a dumb action movie. But he just finds a way to make his movie so fucking good. Like, he's such a talented fucking
The Gentleman shouldn't have worked as a movie, and it's an absolute blast.
Dude, like, just everything. Even I feel like
you
I brought it off.
You couldn't finish that one.
Really?
Oh, you didn't like The Gentleman? Oh, I love the framing of it.
I don't even know if there's a Guy Ritchie movie I've enjoyed.
Sherlock Holmes 1 and 2?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah, I do love Guy Ritchie. Sherlock Holmes.
So, I was in Pittsburgh recording a bunch of episodes of One Hit Thunder. And we had a little bit of downtime, and we were trying to find something to watch. And I'm not usually one to watch a documentary with other people. Documentaries always feel like me time viewing. But Chris was like, yo, I've been hearing a lot of good things about this Nickelodeon documentary. You want to watch it? And I was like, yeah, let's pop on The Orange Years. Have either of you watched The Orange Years yet?
No.
Yo. Okay, so it's on Hulu, and it is breaking down the full history of Nickelodeon, and those people may legitimately have been the smartest people to ever run a network channel in the world. Like,
so 90s Nickelodeon.
Listening to them break down, like, that whole channel, they wanted it to be an educational channel in the same vein as PBS, right? And then they discovered the show You Can't Do That on Television. And they were like, this is the secret to good kids. Good kids entertainment has to feel just dangerous enough that the kids would feel like their parents wouldn't want them watching it. So, like, that became the ethos of everything they did. There's, like, one or two parts where, like, Chris and I were both quiet enough that we knew that the other one was trying not to let the other one know that they were slightly crying a little bit.
You fucking babies.
Well, they do a segment about, I never watched Nick News, but they used to have their own, like, news channel. And apparently, I had no clue that this happened, but when Magic Johnson came out as HIV positive, they called him immediately and were like, would you like to come and talk to kids about what HIV and AIDS is? And wow. They show him sitting there, but, like, they did kind of a gotcha to him in the sense of he was there on the couch with a bunch of kids to talk to them. But before it started, the host said, everybody who has HIV, please raise your hand. And, like, three or four of the kids had HIV, and Magic Johnson wow. didn't know that. And, like, the one little girl starts crying that she's afraid that no one wants to play with her now that she has this disease. Whoa. And, like, seeing how Magic Johnson just is so calm with her and is like, hey, like, that's why we're here, right? We're trying to make people know that it's okay and that you don't have to treat us differently. And it was like, it was such a genuine, sweet moment. And it made me respect the shit out of Magic Johnson, because I was like, I don't know how I would handle that. I would probably just start crying right there and then, like, walk off the set.
Dude, I almost just started fucking crying.
Dude, it's so good. All right, Scott, take us home.
Matt, I love you. There's no way for me to totally shit on the thing I watched this week after that incredibly heartfelt, sensitive discussion of The Orange Channel.
Just tell us what you watched and we'll decide for ourselves.
I'll make it quick, all right? Basically, this is going to be the ultra quick cut, fast forward, throat slit. But I watched Army of the Dead because I want to support Dave Bautista. And that movie is absolute hot horseshit garbage.
Did you watch Zack the whole thing?
I watched the whole fucking thing.
Me
and it was,
too, buddy.
Okay. It was silly fun for about 45 minutes, but that movie is 2 hours and 45 minutes long. So, and I was telling Megan, because I think I hit the first hour in the first night, and then it took me another day and a half to finish the second half, or the second part two, second hour and a half, or whatever. I was telling her, like, I hate zombie movies. And she's like, why are you watching? I was like, well, because I want to talk about it on the show, because we have to be relevant to modern horror as well. The one thing I do like about this is that it skirts all the shit that I hate about horror movies, or about zombie movies, which is normal people being thrown into a stressful situation and then they yell at each other for an hour and a half. But what we do get instead is these mercenaries double-crossing each other, and then Zack Snyder is like, how can I make these people act like robots? Zack Snyder has never seen a human being in real life. I actually think that he goes home and he sits around like Lars and the Real Girl, just surrounded by mannequins. He's the dude in Tourist Trap. He doesn't know what a human being acts like. Because, like, every like movement that the zombie, the fast zombies, like the quote unquote intelligent zombies do, is what an asshole would tell a dancer who's acting as a zombie to do. But not every zombie is going to do a superhero landing. It's so fucking dumb. And people are like, Scott, why haven't you watched the Snyder Cut as Justice League? Because it's 4 hours long, and the first one I watched was 2 hours long, and it was awful. And Zack Snyder should not have money. That dude should not be given blank checks to make what he wants because he's not talented.
Well, I think the editor, based on the fact that there is a Snyder Cut of the Justice League, I think the editor is like what I am a lot of times, where it's like, wow, you're having way too much say in this editing, so let me just collect my fucking paycheck. Because there's no way that that Zack Snyder is not in the editing room, because
a movie
wouldn't be 4.5 hours unless the person wrote it and is like, no, you gotta leave that. That's an important... The whole movie doesn't work without that scene. And it's like, I think it does. It's like, no. We gotta leave it.
And the internal consistency of the zombies is completely lost as well. Like, the last scene, the gotcha scene at the end of the movie, I'm not gonna give it away because it's still relatively new when this comes out. But just give your monsters some consistency, please. Anybody listening that's gonna make a monster movie, please just have your monsters follow some sort of fucking logic, because...
Have your people follow some sort of logic. There's something that happens that makes it so all of this... So shit hits the fan. There's something that happens, so shit hits the fan because one person, and it's like, in a dangerous situation like that, I would do that. If I was going to do that, I would do that when we're 99% done, not 30.
Yeah. Well, and that's not even the most egregious thing about the movie, in my opinion, or the most egregious, like, logical leap. Beyond the zombies not being consistent and the virus not being consistent, or whatever it is. I'm assuming it's a virus. Doesn't matter. It's not discussed in the movie. The part that I really hate is that my favorite character is the first mercenary to die.
My biggest beef with him, and I know I am the minority, he ruined zombies.
I disagree, but I also haven't watched Dawn of the Dead 2005 in...
I think you just mean he introduced running zombies.
Yes,
running
that's
zombies,
what ruined zombies.
Which technically, I mean, if you're going to blame anybody, I guess that would be James Gunn for writing that script, but...
Okay, I guess James Gunn, but yeah, like, and then
but James Gunn's done a whole lot zombies, more good dude. With his Dawn of the Dead success than Zack Snyder.
Yeah, exactly. But at this point, he's made
what ruins zombies, dude, isn't the fast zombie. The fast zombie isn't the problem with zombies.
It's the oversaturation
the
of the
problem.
Same story.
No, but the it's fast the zombie is what... This is what starts. It started they could run. Now we're at Army of the Dead, where they're basically just cannibals that don't have a heartbeat. You know what I mean? It's just like Land
no,
of the
there's
Dead.
No, there's two kinds.
Oh, yeah,
kinds.
But the second so kind... The second kind.
Yeah, but there are fewer of them because of stupid, you know, plot armor. Yeah.
So yay to Orange Years, but maybe not so much for Army of the Dead. Flip side is like, when has Netflix... We already said this before, but like Netflix hasn't produced a good horror movie for like 4 years. So like...
Ooh, they haven't produced a good thriller recently either.
Hey, everybody. That was Alice, Sweet Alice from 1976 as picked by Brian. It's moving over to another Kelly who's taken us into the next decade of the 80s, starring one of the greatest living actors of all time in an early role. So don't miss out on that. Tune in next week.
If you don't know your ABCs, you'll learn them.
Oh, you'll learn your ABCs for sure next week. We'll be back with more Horror Movie Night.
Listening to the Geekscape Network.
You've been lost in the woods for hours now, stumbling around in the dark. You come around the bend and see two people roasting marshmallows over a roaring fire. They see you coming into the clearing and gesture over to pull up a log. Welcome to Campfire Ashes. I'm Paul.
And I'm Jess. Join us as we tell each other our originally written spooky stories around the campfire and then dive into the lore and legends that inspired them. Is it something that goes bump in the night? Is it something menacing lurking past the tree line? Or is it just weird and otherworldly? You'll find it here on Campfire Ashes.
You can find us on Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, or right here on the Geekscape Network.
Hello everyone, we're Superhero Stuff You Should Know, and if you think you know about superheroes and comic books, think again.
We got romance. We got action.
Romance.
We got comedy. We got everything you need, man. Come on down to Superhero Stuff You Should Know for all your superhero needs.
I don't know about this romance. What part are you talking about?
We've got all kinds of sketches and then deep dives on top of that. Come on down to Superhero Stuff You Should Know.
All right, so come on down to... Wait, why did I say come on down? To Superhero Stuff You Should Know.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.